Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson Baltimore, Baltimore Positive. We are positively here in a new location at State Fair on the other side. We're underneath Flea and Eddie Vedder and just next to Stevie Wonder and across from Dave Grohl. And we are in the music capital of Baltimore County. Our friends at the Maryland Lottery brought us out to give away some Pac-Man scratch-offs. We're going to do that all morning long. Orioles are taking on the Blue Jays today as we tape this. Got a lot of friends stopping by on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're going to have crab cake for lunchtime around here. But I did go chicken and waffles this morning. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions bringing us crystal clean water, just like the water I get here at State Fair. They don't put the lemon in it at Liberty Pure. Also, our friends at Jiffy Lube Multi Care putting us on the road. We're going to be on the road next week at Coco's on Wednesday in the afternoon with Max Weiss, Rasig, some other friends. On the 20th, we are at Costas in Dundalk. Come on by for some crab cakes there before the Orioles beat the Yankees. And then the following, that's the 20th and 25th, or excuse me, 26th, we're going to be at Pappas Pub, in Parkville. Come out and join us. Thomas Dolby has joined us. He is about to get on an airplane and fly over to his former homeland of Europe and tour and around America, and they're at Anthem, and it's Tubular, and it's Thompson Twins. You know, I always have some clever blinded me with science thing for you, and you have a book now, and we're kind of mates in the real world, but how are you? I mean, people are still shocked on my timeline when I said, Thomas Dolby, yeah, that one, she blinded me with science, hyperact, he's going to be in Catonsville, and they didn't even know you live here. So, 12 years? How many years you've been here?
Yeah, it's close to 12 years now, yeah. Yeah, amazing. I mean, I like it here. People, you know... Local people
why?
Say to me,
people are like, you know, why are you here?
They do. They say that. And I go, because I really like it. You know, it's a great place. And it's like, it's a glass half full, glass half empty thing. You know, I think it's very easy to see the negatives, and there are some. But it's a great town, you know. And the thing that's great about this is it's not going away. You know, and there's less and less of it. You know, they're not making any more cities like Baltimore. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's just fantastic to be here. And there's so much going on. Myriad problems as well. And you know, you can stick your head in the sand and ignore them. But what's cool is that most people here, certainly everybody I know, is doing something to make it better.
That's what we're doing right now.
You don't get that in big cities. You know, you go to New York, LA, people are just taking care of number one. You know, then you tell them what you're doing for the community. Yeah, hey, see you later. You know, I've got to get to my next meeting. And it's different here. Everybody you talk to is like coaching soccer, or they're working with this charity nonprofit. They're getting involved in a local event, you know, a flower show, a music show, whatever it may be. And I just think it's great like that sort of involvement.
Let's start at the beginning, because I mean, there's so many things we could go through with you. I wore my David Bowie belt buckle, so we're trying to have some fun. What brought you here? What moved you to come here? And I guess I've known you through these stages when my wife had cancer. I mean, we've had meals together, but I haven't talked to you much about Baltimore, certainly not publicly, to say you have better judgment for it now, 12 years later. Like, you signed up. And I thought, well, nice musician. He'll be back in New York or somewhere else within a couple of years when his assignment is over here. I'm kind of frankly shocked you're here 12 years later, but you don't seem shocked.
Yeah, but you know, I've got friends that moved here from, you know, Brooklyn or LA, because here they don't have to worry every month about just making the rent. You know, they've got space to be the artists. It's all so international and global anyway now, with the reliance that we have on the internet. You know, why pay three times the amount to live in Brooklyn or Manhattan or Los Angeles or whatever, when you can live here and have a really nice place and the freedom to express yourself as an artist, and you're so close on the train or a drive or whatever to where it's really happening. So, I mean, it makes a lot of sense as a place to be.
Well, you came here as a professor, right? I mean, that was the link that brought you here.
Yeah, I mean, I got offered a job as a professor in Boston, and I thought, I was very flattered. You know, I left school at 16, so I felt like a complete fraud, but I was flattered that they would offer it to me. Went to Boston, Boston didn't do it for me, really. But I got out and met. I like the idea of being on the East Coast. My wife's family are from New York. My father-in-law is aging, and we wanted to be here. I got out the map, and I looked down the coast, you know, and so you're looking at, I don't know, sort of Yale, Brown, Princeton, down to George Washington or whatever, and I saw a job offering at Johns Hopkins University to teach film music. I'm not a film music expert. I've done a few movies in my time. You know, I like film music, but it's not my specialty, really. It's one of the many things that I've done. So I called him up and I said, look, I don't have a CV or anything to say. Oh, he said, oh, you don't need a CV. You know, we know all about you. We welcome you here. And so I came here to help them open a film center in Station North with Micah and Hopkins, put together this film center. I got that established, and it was a three-year gig. You know, they gave me a special professorship, Homewood Professor of the Arts.
Is this like 13, 14, 15, about that range?
Yeah, 14, yeah. Okay. Yeah, 2014. And it was supposed to be a three-year gig, but my wife and I loved it here, settled here, and so I went to Peabody, which is, you know, the music conservatory of Johns Hopkins University in Mount Vernon, and I came up with a program there to teach students to make music for picture, whether it be film, TV, video games, etc. So we applied for a state, you know, certification and so on. Now I have an undergraduate program at Peabody, so they get a Johns Hopkins degree in music, and we teach them how to compose music for picture. And it's been a big success, and it's grown rapidly over the last 10 years. And they now want me to stay for another 5, so we'll see how that goes.
Well, you like it here, clearly, right?
We like it here, yeah.
How do you find home when when you're a musician from Europe and, you know, marry into America and sort of feet in both sides? And you, I don't know that you've always embraced being Thomas Dolby, She Blinded Me with Science, MTV guy. You've had this amazing path in life where you haven't been a touring musician or been married to that in the way that so many other artists, some of them well paid. Sting's made a life of being a musician. You've dabbled in other things, but now this summer, you're going back and being Thomas Dolby that we know, right?
Well, there's been a big revival in interest in 80s music, right? And so there was a big demand for it. Every year I get invited to go do sort of retro rewind type festivals and things like that. And around about Christmas of last year, I was approached by the Totally Tubular Tour. And their plan was to put together a show of sort of 6, 7, 8 acts from the 80s doing rapid fire auditorium shows that would last 4 or 5 hours, mainly hits driven. So they put together a group of bands that all had 1, 2, you know, major hits in the 80s, so everybody would know every song. And I'm really looking forward to it. The energy is going to be amazing.
You've never done one of these? You've done festivals, but never a tour with the same troupe, basically.
Never touring with the same troupe. And so that's going to be really interesting to sort of take that on the road, you know, as a community. It's going to be like
the Thompson Twins, off the top of my head, Bow Wow Wow. I'm trying to think of the other Plimsolls were part of it. Who else is on this?
Men Without Hats.
All right.
Modern English.
We can dance if we want.
Yeah, yeah. The Romantics and Tommy Two Tone.
867-5309.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Man, absolutely. Thomas Dolby's our guest. We're out here on behalf of our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I got some Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away. I'm going to give Thomas one as well. So the tour's going to Anthem. It's going to different places. You have kind of a special relationship with Thompson Twins, though, right? You're doing several shows just, and my wife and I started singing Hold Me Now, and that's the beauty of music. I mean, 40 years later, every one of the bands you just mentioned, somebody in our audience who's familiar with that part of it, familiar with you, would say, well, that sounds like a pretty good night of music to me. That sounds like something I'd spend $50, $75, $100, go out and have a couple beers and make a night of it.
You know what really sold me on it, Nestor, was they sort of said, you know, unlike many of these other bands, you're not making a living year in, year out touring. You're kind of a rarity. And this may be the only chance people get to see you. And you have, unlike some of these other guys, you never split up. It's not Thomas Dolby of the so-and-so.
Right.
You are the original. You're authentic. You're the aristocracy. You're a gem. So we want to put you on last and really feature you and big you up as, you know, the real sort of icing on the cake. So I thought, okay, I can't say no to that.
Man, they greased you up pretty good, didn't they?
They certainly did.
Well, I've seen The Cure in recent years. I'm thinking of bands of that I would put in your era or mid-80s or early 80s. There's not just a calling. I mean, there were 25,000 people down there singing the songs. The fact that radio has kind of gone away in that way. I was thinking of you today because I came over. I have a legitimate iPod with a legitimate cord, with a legitimate quarter inch stuck into a legitimate quarter inch hole that I can't believe my car still has. Because whenever I rent a car and I take it to Florida, there's nowhere to plug it in anymore. And it's a classic. What do you, how do you experience music? Because experiencing music and keeping your music and music like this alive, I saw Bryan Adams recently, and he's out with the Eurythmics, Dave Stewart. But those 80s bands and that music, my iPod is what does it for me. Mm-hmm. There was classic rock radio, but we're not watching VH1 or MTV anymore. It really is a choice to say, I want to have the Romantics or Thomas Dolby or Hold Me Now on my device or into my playlist. And I think 40 years later, there's something about music that it never leaves you, no matter what it is.
I think it's true. I think people are still in love with the music they were in love with when they were teenagers. You know, I think that's human nature. But what's interesting is they bring their kids, because their kids grew up with that stuff, making, you know, because dad would make them listen to the cassettes in the car or whatever. And a lot of the kids get interested in it. It has a certain value and sort of rarity, you know, to it, that I think a lot of modern music, they don't get the same sense from. So actually, you know, another podcast I saw the other day was Billie Eilish and her dad talking about their favorite records, and she was raving about Me. She was saying, oh, he's so weird, but he's so great. And she was singing along with the song. She said, Dad, you used to make me listen to this when I was little. Remember in the car, we'd go camping, and you know, and her dad was on as well. He was really pleased that he had sort of infected her with his love for my music, you know. So that was sort of a typical generational thing, and that's really special to see somebody, you know, down in the front row that wasn't even alive when, you know, when I was doing this stuff. It's so good.
Well, you never know when a song comes back, and a song like She Blinded Me with Science is like, I walked in, I said, Thomas Dolby's coming. He said, he blinded me with science. So, like, you know, that's 43 years later. What was the song?
82.
That was 42 years later. And I think about songs that sort of stand the test of time and what journeys Don't Stop Believing became after Sopranos. I mean, I remember being in Todd's basement and dropping the needle on Journey Escape. Mm. And you hear these songs later. I was at Secrets in Ocean City last year, and it was all young people. I was by far the oldest person there. And Blondie's One Way or Another came on. Every 23-year-old kid knew the words, every word to the song. And I'm like, why that one? Why not The Tide Is High? Why not Dreaming? Why not? But there is something about being younger that we're not, and we won't know why Billie Eilish thinks you're cool all of a sudden, right? What about that could appeal to her?
You know, and what's interesting is that a few years ago, watching my own kids, they might be into a one song, like One Way or Another. You go, oh, you like Debbie Harry? Blondie? They like look blank.
Who is she? Yeah.
Like, the fact they love one song didn't lead them into listening to others by the same band or reading the credits, finding out who they are. You know, there's no sort of loyalty to that one band. But what I'm seeing now is they're looking for that authenticity, you know, because they lack that a lot with the way they're spoon-fed tens of thousands of contemporary acts, you know. So they're looking for the story behind. And I think, you know, the vinyl revival speaks to the same thing. There's a certain precious quality to taking something out of its sleeve, slapping it on. You know there's only 20 minutes of music on there, but at the end you're probably going to flip it over and listen to the next 20 minutes. And while it's going on, you're going to read the credits. And
you're also experiencing it exactly the way Aerosmith wanted you to when they made Aerosmith Rocks.
Exactly.
Right? Literally, right?
Yeah. And if you get your friends to come in and listen, then you share that experience. It's not the same as your pods, you know.
I want to come over. So what do you listen to? I guess that was my point. I'm on an iPod. I thought you'd be really proud of me with that. And I know you have some scientific thing with MP3s. You discovered something. My buddy Ace, who you met at my house the night we had our house party. To, you know, like, you've tried to explain it, but what – explain it so a dumbass from Dundalk like me can understand you invented something that had to do – with something that's not tangible, that's chippy, correct?
Yeah.
Did I do a poor job of that?
Yes. No, you did a reasonable job. So it was not Dolby noise reduction, okay?
No.
Nothing to do with the Dolby button on all
the
cassette
machines. The one in the movie theater where they would say it's a Dolby.
No, nothing to do with that either. Okay. Complete disclaimer.
That came before you.
Oh, way before me.
Yeah.
No, the thing that I invented that I think you're referring to was that when Nokia ruled the mobile phone world, you know, in about 1990, they had half of the world's mobile phone business, and they needed a way to do ringtones on their phones. And Japanese phones were coming out that had built-in sound chips in them. Nokia didn't want to go that route because it's too expensive. So instead, they came to me and my company, Beatnik, and asked us to create a ringtone synthesizer that would go in Nokia mobile phones. And they embedded it, and it shipped 2-3 billion units, you know, with my synthesizer in it. So every time in the old days, somebody would annoy you when their phone went off in a
I'm trying to think, if you had a contract, so you got 1 penny from 3 billion. I'm trying to do the math on how much money you could get if you just had 1 penny.
That would have been that would have been nice.
That, does it still exist? It's 30-year-old technology.
Well,
right?
It still exists, but nowadays you can use whatever's in your music collection as your ringtone, you know, so you don't need the bleeps anymore. But that you know, so my company sort of programmed that, put it in there.
I knew you invented something really cool that I would never be able to explain if anybody asked me. So I'm glad I asked you. So now I have it. Thomas Dolby's here. We're out in Catonsville, we're at State Fair. We've had chicken and waffles. Some of us have had pancakes, blueberry pancakes for breakfast this morning, and some coffee. From Royal Farms as well. What do you? How do you experience music? And what do you, are you? I've run into you at a Pink Floyd tribute show. So I know you love music. I know you still listen to music. I know you were a David Bowie hippie from the 70s, British hippie. You're a little older than me. So how do you experience? Are you? Because I will never put music on my phone or what I would call my phone. Because it's interruptive. Music is something, I don't want to be interrupted. Even in my car, I don't want the phone to turn off the music. That kind of pisses me off a little bit, like to be interrupted, especially if I'm in a good song. Music is its own thing for me. It's not where I text. It's not where I surf. It's not where Facebook is. Music is a place I go when I do dishes, when I do laundry, when I paint the house, when I'm in my car, when I'm at concerts, which is a lot because I love concerts. But I'm still an iPod guy, and I'm not an iBud guy. I'm not a Bluetooth, but I'm also not a vinyl guy, and I'm not a CD guy. But I got stuck in that iPod era, and I don't know what to do about it. And I you're like the smartest dude I know about music. You're always teaching me stuff. So what? I don't want to say where's it going because we're all guessing that, but like we're all doing it differently. Yeah, that's really what the weird
Nestor,
part is.
What you need is a life coach, not a musician, to tell you the answer to that one. Because I think, you know, a lot of it is a lifestyle thing. We lead busy lives. If you're a professional in the industry like you are, it's very easy to sort of be very arm's length, very hands off about the experience of enjoying music, you know, when you're talking about it. The same is true for me. I'm very analytical. You know, I teach it now as well, so I'm very analytical. I need to now understand it well enough that I can teach it to kids. You know, one of the ways that I experienced it, so you know about Living Classrooms, right?
Of course.
Yeah. So I'm involved with their music program. They have a music program based in Fayette Street in their Under Armour Community Center.
I was there the day you opened that up, former Carmelo Anthony Center, right next to the post office.
Right. So I helped them put a little studio in there, and the kids go in there after school or sometimes adults during the day, and they get to make beats. They learn to play a different instrument. They have little band setups. They didn't get on stage and, like, you know, loop a beat and try a rap over the top of it. They can learn how to put themselves up on SoundCloud or YouTube. They do performances. They put together vocal groups and things like that. And they have a festival, you know, at least once a year.
And these are younger people.
These are younger kids. And their parents love putting them in there. You know, it keeps them out of trouble. It's very creative. And when they come home, their phones have got an app that can do this as well. You know, or if there's a laptop, you know, that the family owns, then there's simple apps, free apps you can get on there that enable them to do this stuff.
So they've got a musician,
a creative skill that they can bring home with them and carry on and share with their friends. And it is one of the few ways to break the cycle of poverty, right? Because the dream of making it big as a musician, as a singer, and getting, you know, out of your community, hitting it big globally, making some money, making a career out of it, you know, there's really sports or music are the ways that you can see to do that. And that dream is so important, you know, to motivate people to get great at sports, go to college on a free ride, or get good at music and become globally famous. That is a very strong motivator, you know, a life motivator, as opposed to going down the sort of darker route.
Well, for you, when you see young people come to college, let's say, and are these all 20, 21, 22, traditionally young people?
Yeah,
folks.
I mean, they're 18, 19, you know, when they come.
What is their music experience when they come to you? Because I've met so many young people, and I've got a wide swath of people. And to your point, some people are listening to Led Zeppelin, and they're in school of rock kind of bands. Other wannabe rappers, country music artists, singer-songwriters. who comes to Peabody, who comes to Hopkins and winds up in your, because you're scoring film, that's a wide variety of kinds of music as well, right? Now, it's not orchestral like you would think in the beginning, right?
You know, I think that Peabody students and Johns Hopkins students in general, it's an elite university, you know. It's going to be the cream of the cream. We have an amazing scholarship program, which is great. If you're really talented and a Baltimore kid, you got a shot at getting a free ride there, or at the very least a very big scholarship. But the card rate for fees is like through the roof, and you'd have to like mortgage your property, you know, most families, to put your kids through there. So there's no question but that it's an expensive way to go unless you have the family means and the talent. But we have changed the requirements for kids coming in. I've got undergrads coming that never learned music formally. They never took piano lessons, never learned theory. They taught themselves on a computer. They've got their own SoundCloud pages or YouTube followers. And they now want to turn that into a career. So we're trying to offer them different career paths in the music and media industries. We've got several alums that are working for game companies. Some are out in LA working as assistants to full-time composers, doing copying, engraving, all sorts of, you know, related things, production, mixing, those kinds of things. And there are a lot of career paths there. And actually, there is more music being commissioned now in Hollywood than ever in the past because of prestige TV, Netflix, etc. And because of the fact that these kids that have grown up doing this on their computers have acquired skills, especially during COVID, that they can now put over into composing orchestral music, you know, on their computers that will eventually be played by a full orchestra. It's a very exciting time.
The recording industry, and as you came up in it in the 80s, that's gone, right? I mean, this is about touring. This is about clicks, likes. This is direct sales. I mean, you and I were talking before we even did the show about putting old posters up. My band's playing the gym this weekend, and I'm sure that as a musician, and that's what you did. It's a whole different level of this when a 20-year-old comes in to you for what the potentiality could be for getting their music global, as you would like to say, versus we had a band and we started in a basement somewhere and had to wait for Mr. Big to show up with a check to sign us to indentured servitude. You know, I mean, that was the music industry, right? It was a mafia-driven sort of a mess, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, the advantage for a younger generation is that they never experienced that themselves. I mean, for you and me, we sort of grew up with that stuff, so it's sort of ingrained that that's the way the world works. Got news for you, that's not the way the world works anymore. It's easier than ever to put content out there. You know, we're making it today. You can make it, put it out there, but there's 10,000 other guys doing the same thing. So the challenge is now, how do you get that noticed, you know? And a lot of that, you're not dealing with an individual intelligence, like an A&R guy at a record company that plucks you out of the crowd and goes, we're going to make a
record. You're dealing with Google Analytics, right?
You're dealing with analytics, you're dealing with algorithms, you're dealing with the way that Spotify or YouTube or Facebook, you know, decides what goes in people's feeds. It's a whole science to it, which never existed before. But I think that, you know, kids growing up with this will be more, it'll be more second nature to them.
Thomas Dolby's our guest. We are here at State Fair in Catonsville. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. No crab cakes are early, but we have some Pac-Man scratch-offs. We'll be giving these away here today. We're going to be at Coco's next Wednesday, Costas on the 20th, or we're going to be at Cooper's for Fleet Week next Friday. I got to say that on the 14th. We were Cooper's North the other day. All of it brought to you by Liberty Pure Solutions. They keep our water clean in and around WNST, as well as Jiffy Lube MultiCare. Thomas is on tour. If you missed earlier, Totally Tubular. They're going to be down at the Anthem and a whole bunch of other places. You can Google it out and find out more about all of that. But we're talking about education. And so young people come in, the wide swath of their musical, taking lessons in a band, in a chorus, took it at school. I would think you see everything, right? Especially where you are, because it's not jazz or rock or folk or country. It's sort of for film, and to your point, maybe a little bit more elite, but also finding, do you see savanti kind of people come to you as you would see it? Like just somebody that's the greatest flute player you've ever seen, or I would think that you see that at this point, because I see these young 8-year-old girls. I'm looking at Dave Grohl up here. That little girl, Chandy, what her name? Nandi? Little 12-year-old girl that plays the drums like the Foo Fighters. And these videos are everywhere. You know, kid in Brazil can sort of shred like Eddie Van Halen, and he's 4 feet high. I wonder what becomes of those people, those savant-y kind of people. As Stevie Wonder's over here talking about savants, right? Yeah. That in the old days they needed Mr. Big. Now, I mean, yeah, there's America's Got Talent or there's, you know, American Idol and those kinds of ways to be seen as well. But you don't need any of that. I mean, most of these childhood people we've seen, it's because they're brilliant. They get online and people say, wow, that's cool. Share, like, click, love. There is some authenticity about that.
Yeah, I mean, kids and pets, no question, you know, through the roof. I mean, I made a video on YouTube of Thomas Dolby's cat pees on the toilet because I had a cat that peed on the toilet. And that video, you know, got more views than a lot of my music videos did. And I think, okay, I didn't actually need to spend all that money making music videos. I just needed to get, you know, a cute pet video and I'd be more popular.
Well, so you had a pet video go viral onto my timeline 3 weeks ago.
This is wild. I have to tell you this story. So I have a Tesla. As you know, for years I resisted getting a car.
You were a biker. Right?
I was a biker. I had my little boat, you know, to get around
the harbor. They built the bike lanes for you in the city, right? Like literally. When I think of the bike lanes, I think of you.
And I use them. And when people park in them, I stop and I give them a piece of my mind, you know. do you realize that you're making this very dangerous for bicyclists? No, but
British intruder over in East Baltimore?
I took nothing but bikes and Ubers for years. And then COVID hit, and it wasn't safe to take Ubers and buses and things. I still rode my bike, but eventually we caved and got a car, right?
When I invited you to Catonsville, I thought it was outside your range.
Yeah.
I thought you're not biking out Frederick Road.
I have a Tesla. You know, we'll leave Elon Musk out of it. I love the technology. I love having a ringside seat and knowing I'm part of the future, this big experiment. And all of the information from those things is going into this sort of cluster, and this is going to inform the way that they're developed going forward. Every time a new software downloads into my car, I think I get really excited.
Does your car drive itself?
Yeah, it drives. Okay, but that's sometimes like a gimmick that you show off to your friends, right?
I have not been shown off that gimmick yet. So
the other night, I'm coming. It was free for a month over Christmas. I don't subscribe to it, right? I didn't buy it.
Oh, so if you have to pay for the car to drive itself.
You pay extra, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it'll do like...
I don't even know this.
No, it'll do auto steer and like typical, you know, motorway, freeway things. But if you want it to, it can take a calendar appointment, like here I am in Catonsville, right, 10 a.m. It can take that from my iPhone and it can plug that in as navigation. You get in and it just goes, right? So it'll do everything. It'll just take you to your destination. And so long as you're paying attention, you don't keep your hands off the wheel so long, and it's safe. You know, once you trust it, it is really very safe. And the stats bear this out. But it's a bit gimmicky. And, you know, I wasn't going to pay a monthly subscription to do this. But the other night when it was, this is I think February, when it was for that month, it was free. So I got it for free. So I'm using it. So I was at a restaurant on Falls Road, you know, sort of off the highway, the sort of dark, you know, Mills area of Falls Road. And I'm coming back from it and I plug in my home address to take me home. And it's winding on that slightly.
But you are behind the wheel of the car.
I was behind, you know.
I'm just trying to understand this. Okay.
No, I'm just watching the road, right? So it's dark. You know, you need your headlights. It's winding through the woods a little bit there alongside the highway. And suddenly it slows down to a stop. And I'm going, what the heck? You know, is this like a malfunction?
Damn Elon Musk. You know?
And then out into the road, in the glare of my headlights, runs a baby fox, followed by four other baby foxes, its siblings. And they can't be more than a few days old. They're running around in the road, right? One of them picks up a twig, and it goes off into
the
bushes.
They look like kittens.
They look like kittens
in the video.
And then when they're gone away into the bushes again, the Tesla picks up speed and drives me home.
But it literally stopped dead and waited for... Then the foxes, it looked like about 25, 30 seconds, right? Like it was a long pause waiting for what it saw navigationally to clear.
My Tesla breaks.
This is why I'm friends with you, Dolby. I learned stuff, man.
It breaks
this is
for
cool.
baby foxes. And then I thought, oh, I didn't get a picture. That's crazy. And
is it okay for me to still hate Elon Musk even though he just saved those foxes?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, that's another issue altogether.
Okay, that's fine.
But I then realized that the security camera on the Tesla records everything. And when you honk your horn, it'll store it to a thumb drive in the glove compartment, right? So the next traffic light, I honk my horn, I go beep. And then I get home, I take out the thumb drive, plug it in my computer, and there is five camera angles on the baby foxes.
And you're yelling for your wife, come look at this, right?
And I put it up on YouTube, and it went.
I showed it to my wife that morning. I saw it. So you had a viral video for that. And look, I was going to lead with his hair, and I was going to let my hair down because my hair, I've got rock and roll hair now. I've got the cars. Let him show you rock and roll hair. You have a hair story, so I'm not going to let you disappear here without. And it also comes with, you did a podcast with a buddy of yours that I want you to plug as well, because you were telling me about his documentary skills in the 70s. But you did a podcast with one of your mates, and the hair thing, I mean, a couple of people knew about it on my timeline when I invited you out, because you're wearing a Ravens hat. You're wearing my Ravens hat, actually. We were together at a Ravens game, and I put the picture of us up. I said, Thomas Dolby's going to come out and do the show, because you were going to come last Friday. And somebody said, he's got hair now. I saw it on the internet. And I saw it too, but I didn't watch the podcast. So reenact. What happened to your hair? What's going on?
Yeah, so, you know, I've got a very busy summer, right? I'm going out on a big tour. I've got a book coming out.
I see your book.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about the book.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. So, you know, for 30 years, I have shaved my head, and that's fine. You know, I did it proudly. I was perfectly happy.
But you shaved it.
I shaved it, you know, like every couple of days.
I thought you were kind of bald by the time you got around to, you know, being 50 or whatever, right?
I shaved it, and I was happy with that. It was cool for a while. You know, a lot of soccer players were shaving their heads or buzzing them.
Andre Agassi, you know?
Exactly. You know, so you could wear it with pride. You had The Rock. You had Vin Diesel. You had, you know, Yul Brynner going back in the days.
Telly Savalas.
Whereas people like Sean Connery or Bruce Willis that were sort of covering it up, or, you know, Paul Simon, Elton John, they got sniggered at because it looked a little bit silly, you know, and so on. And people thought, well, they're being dishonest about this, right? But in this day and age, it is fine for anybody to change their appearance, right? You get piercings, you get
Botox.
You get tattoos left, right, and center. And your friends just go, yeah, whatever, you know. It's like, I just changed my profile picture on Facebook, you know. So people are more upfront about that. It's more accepted that you take, a lot of people are wearing, you know, hair extensions and things like that by choice, even when they've got hair. They're coloring their hair.
Mine grew during COVID, so a lot of people don't recognize me. You haven't seen my hair since it's been long. We haven't been in the same room together, right? So you've never seen me look like this either.
Exactly.
So I've never seen you look like that.
There you go. So anyway, I thought about this, and I thought, well, can I do this? Because what it gives me is a bigger range of ways to express myself, right? Suddenly, I mean, I've lost some weight as well. It gives me a whole new wardrobe, a whole new set of looks that I can do. I can change it up every night. I can go get styled in a regular barber shop and do a completely different style. I can gel it, mousse it, have it crazy.
So you've always had hair. You just never let it grow.
You know,
that's the story of my COVID hair.
I had it on the back and sides, right? I mean, I wouldn't even look up to Donald Trump's standard if I tried to grow it out. But I looked into the technology, and the technology has really changed. And what you can do now is you can get a head of human hair on a very thin membrane that basically disappears on your scalp. And the only thing is it has a short shelf life. So, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, you go back, you do the whole thing again.
Okay.
So it's expensive, right? And you have to go to a specialist place. You know, you can't just do it yourself.
At home,
well, you can
right?
do it yourself, but you have to be really skilled, and you know, be a steep learning curve. But, you know, I go to a salon and I get it done professionally. Whether I'll keep it up after the tour remains to be seen. You know, it's not.
This
it's
tour
not
is fun for you, isn't it?
It's fantastically good.
I mean, I. When's the last time you, like, toured? I mean, I've seen you play at the Harbor. I saw you do a thing with David Bowie. By the way, I'm wearing my David Bowie Pacifica belt buckle. I wore that for you, little Ziggy Starduster. But a real tour, how long ago was the last time you got on a bus, as they say? This will be a bus, right?
It'll be a bus. Yeah, yeah. I think 2014 was the last time I did it, probably with BT. Is that 2014? Yeah, it's about 2014, something like that. So you know, over a decade, really. And I'm not getting any younger. But, you know, the life on the bus is actually very cool. It's a sort of cushioned, cloistered existence. You have no things to worry. You don't have phone bills to worry about. And you don't have, you know, the cleaning, the hoovering to worry about. All you have to do is be ready to get on stage for a few hours a night. And the rest of the day, you can veg out. You go to sleep on the bus. It drives during the night. You wake up the next day, sometime the next day, outside the next venue. You know, you lift some weights.
Toured a lot in the 80s or 90s? Or am I crazy and say, because, I mean, you were such a quirky artist in that way that you weren't like a rock band or like an arena. But I'm assuming, and I don't know this, that You've been to most of these places many, many times. You know what Detroit and Dubuque and all these towns look like. Is this a point in your life where doing this part of the traveling? And I see a lot of artists our age, they really do use this as like a life experience to say, all right, I'm on tour, I'm going to work, but I'm going to go to this museum in this town. I'm going to see this friend. I'm sure at this point you have that part, or is it totally working for you?
You know, you always start a tour saying, let's take a little bit of extra time and go to a museum or a national park. No, yes, let's be different, and let's eat healthy. And 2 or 3 days into it, it's the
over.
Same old...
All right.
No, I mean, I try and do that. You know, it's like... People are, you know, when you get to this age, people are nicer to each other, right? There's a lot of competition when I was in my 20s. I didn't tour endlessly. I tended to do one-off things. You know, I did Live Aid. I did The Wall with Roger Waters. I did the 101 concert with Depeche Mode in L.A. You know, I would do these one-off events that were really sort of milestones, but it wasn't endless touring because I had that opportunity to do production, keyboard playing, songwriting, and then later...
But would you have hated that? I mean, when you think of other bands that have tried, even the bands that made a lot more money, that lifestyle of rolling that out every summer or every other summer, was that something that you wished you had done, or was happy seeing Sting do it and saying, I'm doing what I'm doing?
I was happy seeing other people do it. You know, I mean, it was never... Like, I always had session players with me. It was never my band. So I didn't really have the camaraderie, you know, of a band that grew up together, you know, and then went out on the road. But at the same time, I didn't have the friction, you know, that a lot of those people had. So, there's nothing that I really missed about it because there was always something new to entice me, whether it was video games, the internet, you know, mobile phones, teaching at university. There was always something new on the horizon. And now writing a book. So it's like I'm always looking for the new thing.
But if you had done this 30 other times, this wouldn't. You're almost titillated by it. This is like a real great working year for you, right?
This is the new thing this year. Yeah, because it's been so long since I did
it. I mean, you called me and said you wanted to come out and have some pancakes. I'm like, and you got a book, A Prevailing Wind, a novel.
Yeah.
So this isn't like a novel. What's a novel means that like you put research into this.
It's a novel.
What is it?
Okay, so as you know, I'm passionate about sailing. Right, I love classic sailboats, especially from...
That's why you love James Bond and Living Classrooms, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Especially from the early 20th century. That was the absolute pinnacle of sailboat racing. And it was done by super rich railroads, tycoons, robber barons,
like America's
owners.
Cup?
America's
is,
Cup.
Got it,
the
okay.
New York Yacht Club, right? And the membership of the New York Yacht Club in 1913, when this starts, had more wealth and power than the U.S. Treasury. I mean, they basically ran the country from the squeaky, you know,
Rockefeller,
leather.
That. Yeah, okay.
All of those, Astor, yeah. Carnegie, Vanderbilt, all of those guys. And they're all members of the New York Yacht Club. And their favorite pastime was racing these giant yachts, right? But it took 35 guys to sail them. So these wouldn't be other members with their soft hands. No, they went to Maine lobster ports and they plucked these penniless sailors out of the main communities and hired them to race their yachts for them. So these are the guys that had nothing, right? And they had no experience of this kind of lifestyle. They would be brought to New York or to Newport. They'd be dressed up in the uniforms of these rich guys and sent out to race these sailboats, often against the Brits. That was the America's Cup. And it was a rich man's sport. And at the time, it was bigger than baseball, football, boxing, racing. It was the biggest betting venue in the USA in 1910 to the First World War. And huge spectator sport. So when you had races out in the harbor in front of the Statue of Liberty, it was dotted with spectator boats from big steamers with people paying
money.
Well,
there were no planes flying at that time. This is fast.
Yeah.
Speed.
Speed. It was majesty.
There were no cars.
The first guy to ever put a big logo up was Thomas Lipton from Lipton's Teas. His America's Cup boats had a Lipton's Tea logo on the sails. Right, so he basically created this whole
sports
concept.
Marketing.
Exactly, yeah. Single-handed.
A little sports into the show here today for us. So your book is about?
Yeah, so it's about the America's Cup in 1913 to 1914. America's Cup, by the way, is about to happen. It only happens every few years, like the Olympics or something.
I remember in the 80s when Ted Turner was involved, and it was in Fremantle, Australia.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So this year it's in Barcelona. They're super fast. They do like 40, 50 miles an hour, and there's 8 nations involved. You'll be able to see it on TV. But it's happening in Barcelona, Spain, this fall. But this is looking back to the really golden age of America's Cup. So it's interesting to sports fans. And I think from reading the book, you will learn about the ins and outs of how this was done. But it's a more universal interest. There's a mystery, intrigue, sort of thriller aspect to it going on. And the contrast between rich and poor, the extremes of poverty and wealth in that period.
Tom Stolby's our guest. The book is Prevailing Wind, available anywhere books are sold.
Yeah, Amazon
it's brand new, right?
Whatever. Yes, but it's coming out the 25th of June.
It's not even out.
No, like, you can get an ebook online, or you'll be able to on the 25th for like $5.99 if you've got like a Kindle. Or you can buy it in the stores. The paperback's going to be about $24. The hardback's going to be $39.
My wife would tell you that my wife broke her ankle this week, so she's sort of in bed and hanging out and drugged up and trying to feel better. And when you hit me yesterday, we were supposed to get together next Friday. I moved the show from Fadley's to Cooper's because of Fleet Week. Fleet Week's next Friday. The planes are going to be flying through. We did an entire 2 hours on that over Cooper's the other day. You hit me, and I was sort of giddy. And my wife's like, hey, you like having Tom on a show? And I'm like, I bet we're 40 minutes into this conversation and we've talked about computer chips, Elon Musk, Teslas, Foxes, Totally Tubular, 80s music, authorship, young musicians, the city, fixing the city, Pink Floyd. We've had it all in here, haven't we? What have we missed?
Everything
out on?
But sports, man.
Well, I didn't hit you on the Bowie thing. I'm gonna, because you've told your Bowie Live Aid in the helicopter, like all of that stuff, and you just dropped the Depeche Mode story. I got to get the Depeche Mode out of you. But the Bowie thing for me, a year and a half, 2 years ago, you did a show. Last time you did the show with me, you played Ram's Head. You made me cry. I mean, you got me very emotional because you pulled out this video. You did a real one-off thing that I don't know you did at any other time. You did a Bowie tribute to him at that show.
Using my own footage from Live Aid.
It was your home movies. I went home that night, and I video part of it that night, and I showed it to my wife. I said, this was you're such an artist. I don't know how much time you put into doing that little 7 minutes that you did that night on stage only for the 600 people that were there, 500 people that were there. But the love of Bowie... And I just got this belt buckle about 4 months ago. I had been in search of it. And the music's ubiquitous and it shows up. I interviewed Bowie one time. When people ask me of all the cool things I've ever done in my life journalistically, I sat with 200 NFL Hall of Famers. And there was that time David Bowie called me collect, you know. Yeah. And my wife and I went, since the last time I saw you at our house, we went up to New York. To Brooklyn, to the museum, when they had the Bowie experience there, wore the headsets, paid the $39. We did it on the last day of the entire exhibit. I also did the Pink Floyd one out in London a couple years ago, too. But Bowie and the larger-than-life part of him and your, you know, everybody has a little tie to him. I saw Adrian Belew that night, and Todd Rundgren was there that night. Everybody, Reeves Grabral running around with The Cure. There's something about him. Right? I mean, that you have a little piece of, and I feel like I have a little piece of, that you're proud you have a little piece if you had something to do with David Bowie.
Yeah, I mean, it's a legacy. You know, I think because he's no longer with us, you know, it puts a different sort of lens on it. My experience with him was very personal. And yeah, that thing you're talking about is basically an homage that I made using some of my own recordings and photographs, you know, from
Are you putting that
Live
in Tubular?
Absolutely, that's going to be on
the
Tubular.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, absolutely.
All
yeah.
right.
And it'll be, you know, we've
so
got
So you didn't
got
do
big
it, just
video.
Do it. For, you did it, and you shelved it, and you're bringing it back out. And you knew when you hit the road you were going to bring this out.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So we're going to have big video screens.
Go see the show. I'm
at the Anthem, it is going to look awesome at the Anthem.
Look at that. So I just did unearth something without realizing it. Then.
Yeah, and you know, I've got like a drum pad with different samples of bits of David Bowie vocal licks that I can trigger with my finger. So it's kind of, I'm doing real-time ambient remixes of Bowie.
All right. I love it. All right. So I should get the dates out. Do you know when you're playing at Anthem, or do I have to go to your website and figure it all out?
No, it's the 14th of July.
Okay.
And the following day, this is interesting for Baltimore people and relates to my book. So do you know the Enoch Pratt Library on Cathedral?
Absolutely.
In Mount Vernon? Yeah. So the HQ of the library, which is gorgeous and which is ours, right? They do a book author series, and I'm giving a talk about my book on the following night. So the anthem is July 14th in DC.
Here's what I'm gonna do: I'm gonna get Megan McCorkle on the show about 2 weeks before, and we'll re-promote the Enoch Pratt thing and do a whole Enoch
Pratt
thing. Because I love having her on.
I think
too.
It's 6 p.m. on the 15th, so I'll be talking about my book at the Enoch Pratt.
So you're coming
Library.
To Baltimore, like he doesn't live here, and like you don't run into him.
I get to spend one night at home in the middle of my tour.
All right, man. New hair, old music, new sampling, new book, and still here in Baltimore, and the defending champion of all things. Our favorite European who lives here in Baltimore, Thomas Dolby, musician, author, and professor teaching us things. Did we do a good job with this? Or am I good to wrap this up? Did we get everything in here?
Well, you know, we have to mention that West Ham United need to have a much better season next season, but we're on our way.
You're a West Ham fan?
I am, yeah. And I have to say hello to my fellow West Ham fans at the Abbey Burger on Broadway Square in Fells Point, because that's where all of us hopeless, doomed West Ham fans go to.
You used to get a good cheeseburger while you're there.
To share each other's misery. Very good cheeseburgers.
I'm ignorant about your sport, okay? Mm. So 2 days ago, something showed up on my timeline, because I'm a flipper. You know, I'm like, you know, I'm the algorithm king. And something showed about West Ham and a tragedy and a fight a billion years ago with another team. Is there some lore about it? Like in America, we had 10-cent beer night with the Rangers and the Indians that sparked a riot at a baseball game like 50 years ago. It still comes up. The West Ham had an incident like that. I don't know it, but I thought maybe you did.
Yeah, well, so Millwall is another London team, and we have a thing about Millwall. I'm not quite sure where it dates back to, but at this point, it's become so built
Hatfields
in.
Hatfields and McCoys.
That even the
Steelers, Ravens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right.
So even the young fans that weren't even around when it happened, you know, they know
they
that
bought
we
in, right.
They know that we hate Millwall.
All right, good. A real, I don't say hooligan, but he wants to be. A hooligan wannabe. Thomas Dolby here. We're at State Fair. We've already had the chicken and waffles. I'm holding out for. They have a delicious salmon lunch that they do here. I'm going to take home to my wife, who's on crutches. Big thanks everybody out there that's giving my wife some love. Our friends at the Maryland Lottery are giving us some love. I got some Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away. We're going to have some lucky sevens. Next week, we get the Cocos. We get the Coopers on Friday. We're going to be at Costas. We're going to be at Pappas in Parkville. But right now, we're here in the heart of the Ville, the music capital of Baltimore County. And I brought a real musician here, Thomas Dolby. Make sure you're checking out the Totally Tubular Festival. Check out his book. Make sure you're checking them out on the 14th at the Anthem down in D.C. You've been to the Anthem, right?
Oh, yeah.
What have you seen there? Anything good? I saw Lenny Kravitz there. I saw Seal there.
Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark and
if
New Order.
Oh, you saw New Order.
Yeah, and
there.
I played that. Oh, I guested there with Berlin.
You did?
Mm.
All right. I love New Order. Yeah. You're naming all the music I love. Huh. They didn't have belt buckles. These belt buckles were 76, 79, 77, 78, 79. So the only sort of new pop band that got one made was The Police.
Oh, okay.
There is a Police belt buckle. There's not a Pretenders. Mm-hmm. There's not even like an AC/DC. They weren't even happening that. No. So it's more Zeppelin, Boston, Kansas, Frampton, Aerosmith. You know, the stuff we were listening to. Mm-hmm. You listened to all that, didn't you?
No.
You did not? You did.
No, a little bit.
You were listening to Bowie and the Sex Pistols. What were you listening to?
Obscure German electronic music. And
Kraftwerk?
Yeah, Kraftwerk and post-punk, you know, stuff, indie stuff in the UK, the Smiths and so on.
Smiths,
the Cure.
Okay.
Susie and the Banshees. Yeah.
All right. He's out with Thompson Twins and a whole bunch of other bands. Go check him out. I love Bow Wow Wow. I want candy. That's why I'm here in Catonsville. Back for more on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Stay with us.